Welcome to Atlanta Business Radio. I am Lee Cantor, and I am joined in the studio with my co-host, Stone Payton. How you doing, Stone?
Good morning, sir. I am doing well. I've had a busy week. You know, we had the holiday, and then I went to the University of Georgia orientation. The lady had a great line opening up. She was trying to impress upon all the college kids, this is different than high school. Right. There's no bell that rings that tells you when to go to class. There's no hall pass.
You're not going to college. This is your
child. I want to go, though. I really want to go. But she told him, no hall pass, no detention. There is jail, however.
Really? There's an actual jail?
Absolutely. So, but I had a good time. So we're gonna send the kid off in August, and I had a really good week.
Your job is done.
My job is, I've done all I can do, man.
That's it. It's out of your hands.
What have you been up to?
We did the classic All-American thing this holiday. We went to a baseball game. Minor
really?
League game in Rome, Georgia.
Don't you like minor league better than major
league
in a lot of respects?
Not even close.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a much more intimate experience.
Right. So we had a good time, got a foul ball, first time ever.
Really?
But in a way that it's not a normal way. It went over into the parking lot, and I was going to my car, and I found it on the ground. It wasn't as dramatic. My kid was just as excited.
But we're in the major leagues today, man. We got some big hits here, right?
Big show.
So who do we bring with us?
We got Mr. Ray Gilbert. How you doing, Ray?
Hey, good morning, everyone. Good to see you.
Do you want to talk about what you guys got going on here?
Yeah, I'm actually with the British American Business Group, and I've been with the organization for about 12 years.
12 years?
Yeah. I'm only 18, by the way.
That's amazing.
I've been with the organization for 12 years, and for the last 3 years in the role of the executive director, so it's more of a full-time role. Directly with that, and that's what I do.
So what's your responsibility? What do you charge for?
What do I charge?
Are you
asking me what I charge the bridge? I don't tell the tax man.
What's your mission?
We're an organization that's the premier organization for transatlantic business. So in Atlanta, there are 40 international chambers of commerce. So you've got the British, the Brazilian, the French, the German, the
you're going to name them all?
No, I'm not. But so that's where we fit in. We're one of the larger organizations, and closely linked with the likes of Trade, UK Trade and Investment, and these organizations. So we help facilitate business to and from the UK to the Southeast.
So you help the British companies come here and get kind of foothold and
springboard to success.
That's it?
I believe that's the term.
And then what about, do you help American firms in Britain, or it's mostly helping British firms here?
Absolutely. No, it's a two-way traffic. We're closely aligned to the likes of Georgia Department of Economic Development and Metro Atlanta Chamber and, as I said, UK Trade and Investment and the British Consulate. And so that's a two-way traffic, and it's probably equal. I mean, if I'm not mistaken, Britain's certainly one of the largest, if not the largest, partner with the Southeast, with Georgia.
Right. Now, when you first got here, were you living here in America, or you came here just for this purpose?
Not for that purpose, no. My background's actually 27 years running chains of employment agencies, so mine is a sales leadership role historically, and I became personally involved with the British American Business Group, like I said, 12 years ago. Got involved behind the scenes, and then about 3 years ago, I followed my passion, I would guess, and took the role on full time. So this is what I do full time, but it's not my original background.
Right.
So now for the last 3 years, I've been quite heavily immersed in economic development between our countries and learning about that, but from a private sector's perspective. So that's what I am.
So why would a UK business be interested in the United States or Georgia for that matter? What's attractive to them about our business climate here?
I think the first thing you would look at, I mean, my understanding is that the Southeast of the United States is the sixth largest economy, according to the IMF, in the world. Right, so why would you not want to be involved with the
I didn't realize that. I mean, I knew we had the grits, and I mean, I know that's got to be a draw, but I didn't know that. Did you know that, Lee?
Yeah, you've got the grits, you've got UGA, and you've got the Braves, but I think that some of the bigger factors, if you look at the Southeast, you've got the largest airport on the planet here at Hartsfield-Jackson. You've got a phenomenal ports authority down in Savannah, which is, you know, envied by many of the other countries in the world, and that's from a commerce perspective. But you've also got a relatively inexpensive cost of living here. I mean, try buying gas or cigarettes over in the UK, and you'll not be complaining about $4 a gallon. Trust me. But beyond that, there's a fantastic workforce, very high-level workforce here in Atlanta. The weather, I mean, I've come from the UK. If it's not raining, it's about to rain sometimes, you know. And so coming over here, that's a physical reason why I would want to be here. But the cost of living, the cost of doing business, a huge marketplace, you add all those together, it's a perfect...
How complicated is it? If you've got a good, successful thing going over to the UK, you think you want to expand into the Southeast or move all together, is there a lot of red tape, a lot of paperwork, or not so much anymore?
I would suggest that there's plenty advice about to be able to make sure that that happens correctly. With hindsight, I mean, I've been 15 years over here in the US, despite this accent. You know, I mean, I'm 15 years working in the UK, 15 years here, so I'm like a Americanized Brit now. I'm somewhere between the two. And the biggest thing to me, more so than overcoming red tape, is that there are subtle cultural differences between the two countries, you know, and... You know, many people, including myself, come over here, don't go through any form of cross-cultural training, and find out the hard way that they've left dollars on the table, or they've gone through more pain because of not quite understanding the subtle differences of the culture. Now, don't get me wrong, there's a lot more in common. I mean, there is a true partnership between particularly the UK and the US, this special arrangement. But there's also cultural differences. An example might be, in the UK, I think there is... Despite having a high level of quality in the States, there's a very, very, very high attention to detail in the UK. On the flip side of that is, we're probably known to deliberate a bit more than the average person. Whereas in the States, would it be, you know, strange to see the situation that says Americans in particular, I think they take brilliant ideas to market very fast. Do they necessarily stop and wait and go and fill in all the detail to the same extent as the Brits? Probably not. So there's a balance between the two. And you know, if you just looked at cultures, friendships in the UK probably take longer to develop, but when you do develop them, they're generally very deep. And in the US, you know, we make millions of friends in the first hour, you know.
Now, when you're going back to Britain, is it hard to convince people to come here and take a shot, or is it, you know, are they more risk tolerant there? I'm sure you see opportunities for them more than they're ready to kind of make the leap.
I would say so. I mean, I think the fact that I'm sure that many of the UK businesses aren't aware that this is the sixth largest economy in the world.
Right.
But I'm very enthusiastic. I'm very passionate about being here. Otherwise, I wouldn't be living here.
Sure. You know? But is it hard to convince them, or do you have any success stories of maybe you convinced somebody to come over here, or you helped encourage them, and then, you know, they made a go of it and it worked out?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing, well, actually, there's a slightly different answer to that one. From my own personal experience, which is only 3 years in this particular environment, I've seen a situation where we've had companies who were already thinking about coming over here, who were then enticed to come over here and do it properly and sustain themselves longer and get to success a lot faster. There's a lot of advice over here available to people from all of the utilities firms have got economic development departments to them. Georgia Power's got it, MEAG Power, and so on. And then you've got the chambers, the Metro Atlanta Chamber, the Georgia Department of Economic Development. What a lot of the international chambers do on top of that is that they can... there's a lot of connectors. These are business networking people in these organizations. And they've got a plethora of sales contacts and purchasing contacts. So they can help companies start to connect with the firms that will use their services or products.
Before they even get over here, they can start making those connections, right?
I think the starting point of one of the areas that we can be quite influential in is where we start to virtually incubate some companies who have got a great idea or a great service, set them up in a virtual incubation model, right? So that they don't quite have enough business to be able to be over here permanently yet.
Right.
But that starts to get the ball rolling rather than lying in limbo. And then from there, those virtually incubated companies can become the part of the trade mission that you would bring over here to convert them to be physically involved and present over here. So that's when I think we can help. But the biggest thing for me is that we can connect them with, once we understand their products and services and we know that they're differentiated and of value, it's very easy for us to find people who can network them into the companies that would actually purchase those products and services. So
Well, Daniel, this guy is very articulate about all this, but is this stuff true, or is he just
He is very articulate. He'll talk to you all day if you let him. So
it's getting up to be quiet, the problem.
That's right.
Let's get the real skinny now from Daniel Bowers, who is with the French American Chamber of Commerce. Give us your perspective on all this, man.
Well, I would be Ray's counterpart with the French. So unfortunately, I don't have the crazy European accent, but we can speak with the French accent if it makes you.
I like that.
That classes up the show a little bit.
Everybody loves a French accent. So I would just give you a little background about our organization. We're very similar to the British American Business Group in terms of bilateral trade organization. But whereas Ray deals primarily with companies in the UK, we're dealing with French companies and with foreign trade and investment from France into the southeastern United States. So it's we're kind of sister organizations, but dealing with different countries.
And is that interest new from France, or has that got a pretty good, strong precedent?
No, there's a long history of investment and trade between France and in the UK and Europe and the United States going back to colonial days. I mean, this is not something that's just happened overnight. But I think where Ray would make a good point is if you look at what's happened in Atlanta and in the Southeast over the last 40 or 50 years, I think the investment that was made down at Hartsfield-Jackson and in the airport has been a significant driver in really bringing that trade and investment to new levels and to new peaks in Georgia and in Atlanta. And especially with the development of the ports of Savannah as well, I think you see a large amount of trade and shipping that's coming through that port from Europe into the Southeast. And we really are, when we look at the strengths of Atlanta and what makes this such an interesting area, I think the crossroads of the major interstates and the distribution network with the railroads, with the ports, we really do have a very unique situation here in the Southeastern, where Atlanta sits really at a hub of distribution for the United States and for a large part of the United States. I think they say that you can reach 2/3 of the population of the United States in a car within 8 hours. So it's really ideally situated to be that center of investment and trade from many parts of the world. And I think that's what you're seeing happen in Atlanta right now.
Now, when you're talking to French companies, what is their hesitation then about kind of exploring coming here? What are they afraid of?
I think French companies may suffer from something that the British companies don't suffer from, and that's a language barrier to begin with. And then I think there's
my accent starts cute, then it gets incomprehensible,
especially after pub night.
Yeah,
that's exactly. Right. So you immediately start with a language barrier, and Ray talked a little bit about the cultural barrier as well, and some of the cultural differences. I always like to think that the French and Americans have a lot more in common than we do in difference. Mm-hmm. And if we just sit down and talk and actually get together and know each other a little bit better, that becomes very obvious that we're really. I think of all the countries in the world, I like to think the French are much more similar to Americans than just about any other country, mm-hmm. in terms of their independence and in the way they think about living and how they want to live their lives.
Right.
I think there's a lot to be said about that. But so barriers for the French, I think, first of all, you have to get over that language and that cultural problem. But the French are very motivated to come and explore the world. I think especially if you look at the way their university systems are run, the government in France has made it an initiative to send young French people out into the world to develop relationships elsewhere. So university students are now being required as part of their studies to spend a year abroad internships. So they have to go somewhere else. They have to learn foreign languages. And the French government has recognized that for France to stay competitive in the world market, they have to go out and develop those relationships, and they have to make that initiative happen.
So do you help them get internships here?
Yeah, we actually do. And I have two young interns who spend 6 months to a year at our organization regularly. And so they come in and rotate and spend 6 months or a year working with me and with the French.
Let's get a French producer.
Yeah, work on that.
Can you imagine being a student in Georgia and you've got a choice of where to go, and a couple of the options that come up are Paris and London? How cool is that? In fact, recently we had a gala that we turned into a James Bond gala, as British as you get, to help raise funds. And one of the key things that we did, having raised the money, was set up a scholarship program between UGA and Oxford University. And those are two cool universities to start working together, so I was quite proud of doing that.
I want to hear more about that. I just dropped one off at UGA.
Is that right? Yeah. Well, it's an embryonic thing from our perspective. It's like, you know, when you buy a racehorse, you don't go straight to a thoroughbred. We've probably bought a leg here, you know, or something similar. But we've started the ball rolling, and, you know, I mean, Oxford University is a phenomenal.
She's going. I mean, she's got it all. She met with her advisor yesterday, and I think it's like the fall of next year or whatever the term is. She's going. She's going to Oxford. Absolutely.
Oh, that's incredible.
I think Ray brings up a good point, though, and that's the university. Another of the major strengths in this region is the university systems, and we don't look enough at University of Georgia, Georgia Tech, Georgia State, Emory. There are some top-notch universities here, and especially when you speak about the international trade, Georgia Tech has a campus in Metz-Lorraine on the Alsatian, the German border, that currently houses about 400 American students at any given time in France. And the number of French students who come here for engineering training to Georgia Tech is really impressive. If you go down and walk around the campus on the engineering side of Georgia Tech, you would be amazed to hear the number of French and the number of foreign accents and languages that are being spoken on the campuses here in Atlanta.
And they're getting all the girls, too.
And they're getting all
the girls,
of course.
Georgia Tech's got a presence over in Ireland as well. Once again, I'm not from the economic development world directly, but I've got enough common sense and see what's happening here. You've got one of the key things that's happening in today's world is the days of having a strong arm and a strong back in manufacturing, that's yesterday. Today, intellectual capital, as they call it, is really the key to success. So if you look at in the UK, for example, the largest universities are actually in the northwest, where the two universities in Manchester have combined into a huge university. There's a direct link, thanks to Delta Airlines, between Manchester and Atlanta, which enhances things no end. And so there's a lot of to-ing and fro-ing where trade missions come from Liverpool and Manchester over here and link up with Emory and UGA and Georgia Tech. And the real pinnacle stuff happening throughout the world, you know, really clever stuff going on.
And then the universities in Georgia are well-respected in Europe? Like, they're aware, you know, I'm sure they know of Harvard and Yale and things like that.
Right.
So they know about Georgia Tech? Like, that's on their radar?
Georgia Tech, no problem. Right. Absolutely.
Really?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
But there are other universities. I guess you could look at the reciprocal. There's a university next to Edinburgh, Heriot Watt University, that's phenomenal in terms of internet, you know, IT and technology and so on. But it's interesting not having an airline link to Scotland. Delta used to fly to Edinburgh, for example, and then presumably the volume of traffic wasn't big enough. But if you could link up Edinburgh University and Heriot Watt University with Atlanta, I'm telling you, things would grow without a doubt. It's huge, and we just need to look at how it's possible to achieve that and allow Delta to make the relevant profits they would need to.
So Delta's a key player in all this.
They really are. We've got to talk to them at that Global Connect thing and get them on board on getting back to Edinburgh.
That's right.
So what kind of reputation does Business Radio X have over there on that side of the pond?
Massive. I mean every morning that's what we do. We turn off Radio 1 and on comes Atlanta Business Radio.
We're working on a BBC X.
You need to translate into French and then we'll be in good shape. So
The thing that gets me is if you look at Atlanta, I've been in Atlanta since, 94? 70 years ago, Delta come here in 1941. Can you imagine what it was like in 1939 as a city? It would still have contained its growth. It would still have maintained its growth. But, you know, here we are now with the largest airline in the world, the largest airport in the world. We've won Olympic Games. You know, it's just incredible to see the difference and the dynamic growth. I'd love to see a statistic that shows how Atlanta has grown since 1940 to now compared to London or Paris or Tokyo or anywhere else. I bet it knocks them out of the park.
Yeah, I don't think it's people have that kind of that conceptually to be able to kind of understand it in that way. They don't look at Atlanta that way. It's kind of you take it for granted when you live here.
70 years ago is one generation. I mean,
right.
You know. Socks that old, you know.
No, it's been amazing growth. And so you're thinking Delta is one of the key reasons that
Delta is a huge player in that, obviously. I think that having the number of direct international flights and just the size of that firm. But I think Atlanta plays to the strength of a lot of major companies that are headquartered here, not just Delta, which we love Delta in Coca-Cola and Rubbermaid and there's any number of major firms
UPS,
that aren't just UPS and it's not just American firms, but the number of international firms that have headquarters now in Atlanta. I think one of the strengths that's helping grow our community and what Ray and I do is looking at the number of consuls and the consular corps that is headquartered here in Atlanta. And I think I threw the statistic out yesterday that there's about 70 full-time consulates and
yep.
And honorary consulates that are now represented in Atlanta. Wow. And I think the only other city in the United States that has more international consulates represented would be D.C. or New York.
New York, right.
So really, when you look at cosmopolitan cities in the United States, we're number two or three. I mean, we're right up there at the top. And I think that gets lost, not just in Georgia and in Atlanta and in people's minds in the United States, but outside of the United States as well. I think when you speak to French companies and you say, oh, we're from Atlanta, they look at you and say, Atlanta? Oh,
right.
Oh, c'est super.
Do they think it's like a backwoods, you know, hee-haw? Like
exactly. Yeah. Well, they think about your grits and, right. and the Atlanta Braves. So, and that's about the extent of the knowledge. So what Ray and I have been doing to try and increase the awareness is we work closer together and to bring events like this Global Connect that's
going
to happen.
Yeah, why don't we talk about the Global Connect?
On July 21st.
What is that about?
Yeah. Well, we started the initiative to try and bring this international community together for an evening of networking and for opportunities to make connections, because that really is, when you look at the goal of our organization, it's to bring companies right. together, to make those connections, to let people do business together. And so when I took over my role with the French, which was only about 10 months ago, I'm kind of a baby to this organization. I started to look for people and for organizations that we can partner with. It's no use just to go off and do your own thing.
Right.
I think we're a lot stronger if we work together. And
right.
so Ray was a natural fit being with the British. And so we've actually started to work together quite a bit to create events and to work together to bring our members together to try and increase the value of membership into our organization.
Now, previously, were the chambers and the consulates kind of doing their own thing?
They still do. Absolutely.
So it's very like kind
part.
Of siloed.
Yes.
And then this is an opportunity for everybody to kind of get together.
I mean, the way that this started off wasn't rocket science. I mean, if we had to organize our own event, and we are one of the larger chambers like the Germans and the Hispanic Chamber and the French Chamber, if we did our own event, we're going to get 60 to 100 people at it.
Right.
If you bring 10 European chambers together, as we did at the W Hotel just in the last couple of weeks, you'll get 500 people at it.
Right.
And if you bring 30 of the 38 Chambers of Commerce, international chambers together for this Global Connect event, we'll get 1,500 people at it without even starting. And then it becomes exponential as well, because you've got a much more exciting event, so you can bring in sponsors. And you can, and then beyond that, what was happening, although the initial intention was to simply bring together the international chamber community into one dynamic event, separately from that, Delta Airlines were planning to celebrate and thank the chambers that they donate to and they help out, to thank them. And they were going to have their own event at Delta's corporate offices. So we said, why don't you hook up here? So now what we've got is a double celebration. So add to that international chamber networking, having fun, meeting in all these
right.
different cultures, you can add on the fact that we are all together going to be celebrating Delta's 70 years as Atlanta's hometown industry. Now that starts to open up the door by saying, why don't we get somebody from the new international airport to come along? And why don't we get Cassim Reed or Nathan Deal to come and join us as well? And we'll give them 10 minutes maximum for talking and all that stuff. But no, absolutely, that's in the works at the moment.
Right.
And bear in mind that this is organized by what is predominantly volunteer-driven organizations.
Right.
You know, which these are. So let's
put
it in
perspective. But this sounds like a grassroots. Like, this is coming from the chambers up. It's not coming from some corporate person down.
Yeah, everything we do is pretty much from the chambers up.
We're
all independent, not-for-profit organizations, the chambers here. At least 99% of us are. So whatever we do, it does come from us as an initiative or from our members or from collaboration with other chambers and other people.
Yeah,
and
the
liquor sales alone that night are going to jack up the Georgia's GDP. You know
right.
that.
Massive, and that's our way of paying back 200 Peachtree, which is the
right.
location
yeah.
we're going to. It's a phenomenal location. I mean, I didn't know it existed. It's the old Macy's building down on Peachtree that's got, you know, the grand atrium's all marble floors and marble columns and crystal chandeliers and just beautiful.
And right. a catering kitchen to die for. I mean, it's just a beautiful
now,
facility.
Now, what's going to happen at this event? I know you mentioned networking, but is there restaurants, food, what are the activities that are going on other than politicians talking for 10 minutes?
Right. So what we've done is we've extended to our members and to the global community to try and bring restaurants or to bring food from their country to come and represent
right.
who they are and the culture that they're representing. So,
I guess.
Yes, exactly. So Ray is generously providing the haggis.
We won't need much.
The bakers and haggis bar. We have a chocolatier who's going to come down and put up a chocolate fountain for the French.
Wow. Nice.
And so we'll probably set up a little crepe stand as well.
Let me do a pitch on this one, because at the moment we're basically trying to say, you know, let's provide a taste of your country, a taste of Brazil, a taste of Switzerland, whatever. We need more help on that one. And can I also emphasize, we're not feeding the 5,000. We're not doing a banquet here. This right. is a, this is an additional thing that will allow people to enjoy a taste, a sampling of foods from the world provided by local restaurateurs, as we can promote their services as well. But restaurateurs out there, bakeries, whatever, call 404-681-2224. You'll get through to me directly, and let's talk about how you can promote your business and we can feed the 1,500-plus people that are going to be there.
Yeah, it's a great opportunity for restaurants to come down and get involved and showcase what they do and the countries they represent, the cuisine they represent.
So are the chambers, are they in charge of bringing their country's restaurant in there, or you got to do their heavy lifting for them?
No. I mean, we've asked them to collaborate and help out and, you know, find somebody from their own country that will represent a taste of their country. You
right.
know?
But again, like Ray says, most of these organizations are volunteer-driven. So sometimes it's hard to mobilize and get people to make that happen. But.
What a great event. That's going to be a lot of fun. We're going, right?
Absolutely.
We're going to be there.
July 21st. It's a Thursday, and it's 5:30 it starts, and it's just a phenomenal location, and it will be jumping.
And you can find more information on the British American Business Group's website at babg.org, where you can sign up and buy your advance ticket.
Yeah, just look for the calendar and you'll see Global Connect.
Yeah.
And your website, if I'm not mistaken, is facc-atlanta.com, isn't it?
.com, that's right.
I was just testing.
That's right. That's
you
good.
Knew that.
Wow.
So these guys really, they live it. They're actually collaborating. I know you were talking about collaboration before we went on the air, but you guys are really pulling this off.
That's right.
You?
We are. We're doing our best. I think that all together we can make a much bigger pie for everybody to share if we work together.
If you look at this event, we've got. You know, every corner of the globe's covered. There's, you know, Brazil, Ecuador, Peru, Mexico, that covers the South, you know, the South America. We've obviously got the French, German, Swiss, Danish, Polish, Turkish, whatever from Europe, Indian, Chinese, Japanese, Australia, New Zealand, Africa. What we got from Africa? South Africa.
South Africa. And then we have the Pan-African Chamber of Commerce.
We need more chambers of commerce in Africa.
Yeah.
We need one in Burkina Faso.
I couldn't get all those people to cross the street without somebody getting hurt, much less put on an event like that. That's incredible.
Well, I think it really opens people's eyes to what's going on in Atlanta. I think when you speak to the person from Atlanta who doesn't realize how international this city has grown, it's really surprising.
When you put them all in one room.
Exactly.
There's two words that summarize it for me. And whenever I go to these, I get invited to networking events every day. And, you know, some of them just wash over me to a certain extent. But there's two words I'm looking for, and I think this Global Connect event on July 21st does it. Fun and productive. I want both. I don't want productive only, because I'm a human being. I need fun. And fun only is going to wear thin after a while. I need both, and that event provides it. It's
so
pretty cool.
How is it going to be productive? What would be a win for the attendees?
If you bear in mind that I look at the process of a lot of these networking organizations. If you bear in mind that a lot of these events are predominantly full of salespeople, right? Now, call me old-fashioned, but, you know, unless you've got a buyer there, you're probably going to not make any transactions, right? But what they don't understand is go there and start to learn and build relationships with these people. Then you start to realize that instead of trying to sell to that sales rep who wants to sell to you, you learn about who they're selling to. You get rapport with them. The sales cycle time comes down. And because of that, you start to do business not with them, but with the people they know.
So you do networking classes too, Ray, on the side?
$1,000 a day, 404-681-2224.
So you expect a big crowd, you said 1,500, a couple thousand people there?
1,500 anyway. I mean, it's hard to do, but register now. Don't pin the door. And there's an early bird price that will save you $5. So it's $20 at the moment if you go there.
And it's all the haggis you can eat?
All the haggis you can stomach. I'll have you know I actually miss and love haggis. It's one of the tastiest.
They don't have that at Whole Foods? You can't find that there?
I do believe Publix are starting to serve it in their international section.
There you go.
Be there or be square.
So, Stone, we'll be there.
We will definitely. We're going to do the whole remote broadcast. Yeah. We're going to have the mobile version of this studio there on site. We're going to be interviewing people from all these different chambers.
That's great. Maybe we can find somebody with a real French accent for
us. bring in a ringer.
That's going to be fun stuff. Well, before we wrap up this segment, let's make sure once again that our listeners know how to get information on Global Connect and know how to get information and reach each of your respective chambers.
Yeah. You start, Daniel.
Sure. Yeah. So the French American Chamber of Commerce of Atlanta, we can be found at www.facc.com. info@atlanta.com, or you can reach us by phone at 404-997-6800.
Yeah, and the British American Business Group is babg.org, and that's where currently the actual processing of event registration for Global Connect is. So if you just go to babg.org, and you'll see a calendar there, and Global Connect is right at the top. Click in it, and off you go. Put in your credit card, and we're good to go. And there's join 1,500 people with us on the 21st.
And again, Global Connect will be on Thursday, July the 21st, from 5:30 to 9 o'clock p.m. at 200 Peachtree. That's 200 Peachtree Street, downtown Atlanta.
Right, the old Macy's building.
The old Macy's building.
Old Macy's building. Well, thank you so much, both of you, for coming down and visiting with us.
Our pleasure.
And Lee, I would love to have them come back and maybe bring members of the chamber that are operating businesses and are making the transition.
If we can promote any of the businesses that you guys work with, we'd be glad to do that.
I think that's a fantastic idea. I'm sure they'd be definitely happy one we want to pick up on. Yeah.
Yeah, you guys would be up for that. I think that'd be a great. I mean, you could probably have a whole international show, but at least some kind of
It would be good to do it kind of one at a time. That way, that we can put a spotlight on each of the chambers.
Right. All right. Cool stuff.
Make that happen, sir.
Well, yes, sir.
You'll meet them all on the 21st of July. So
we'll book the whole year.
That's right.
Maybe we don't have to do it then.
Just bring a clipboard to Global Connect and book them for the whole year, right?
There you go.
So can you guys hang out with us for a little while we visit with our next guest?
We'd love to.
Oh, fantastic. Right. Well, next up on Atlanta Business Radio is the Grand Poobah, the president, the CEO of Creative Challenges. We're not even going to take a crack at the last name. We'll let him tell us about that, but welcome to the show, Alan.
Hi. Alan Beauvais.
I like that. That sounds very nice. You got to talk right into the end of this thing, just like you're doing karaoke.
Yeah, don't look at Stone.
Don't look at me.
You got to look at Ray.
You're trying to be polite. So Creative Challenges, I'm sure we're all challenged with creativity from time to time, but you can make a living at this?
Pretty much, yes. It's a company that was established in 1999. And we've been in Atlanta for the past 2 years. We relocated from New York. And pretty much what we do, we are a software development company, and we develop software for the internet, pretty much web-based application. And what we build is everything from your simple websites to very complex systems, from logistics management, tracking systems, subscription management systems. And our company is currently reinventing itself from the grounds up, and we are very excited because we are actually focusing ourselves on activities we are really passionate about, instead of just what we've done for the past 10 years was like taking any projects.
So are you involved in any of the app work, you know, all the iPhone apps and the mobile stuff? Do that too?
We are. Yes, we are. And one product that we are actually developing for ourselves is a communication tool, a messaging tool that should come out in about 6 months. And that's pretty much going to change the way we communicate in business overall, from email messaging to video telephony.
And so this mobile marketing, having the apps, all this stuff, is it just a fad, or is that where marketing is really going in a lot of cases?
It's the future, it's the present, and it's the way it's going to be. Everything from the way, anything like, for instance, email as we know it, where you get someone's email address, I will venture to say like within 3 years, will no longer be in use. We will have alternative ways of communicating.
And what are those ways so I can... Well, start now.
Pretty much.
Get a leg up, right?
Our smartphones, as we call them, will really be like mini computers where we actually do everything possible in life.
Wow. What about these tablets? You think they're going to stick around, or is that a fad?
It's not a fad. They are here to stay, but they will pretty much evolve. And there's a lot of changes happening now on the market. And the way to look at it is, like, for instance, if you take your regular telephone, we currently dial numbers, and that's going to change as well. No longer you will need to remember people's numbers, but you will just reach for their names and you connect with them. And video telephony, it's coming also. Within 3 years, that's going to be.
So if you're not dialing numbers, all there is numbers and letters, right? What's left?
Just your thoughts. It's finally here that I can just think something and it appears.
Oh, that's not going to be healthy for me.
Well, the idea is, I think companies such as Google have caught on to it, but the idea is really unified communication is where in one place you are able to have video, voice, and message, text communications, not email, but text messaging.
What's the biggest challenge for you when you're working with your clients? Are they adopting this, or they want things to be the way they used to be, and you have to kind of drag them into the internet world?
Well, a lot of times with our clients, one of the things we do is oftentimes when we take on their projects is really look at their business models first rather than offer to build what they ask for. And we end up working with their business model, and sometimes they go at get in the process of refining it because their discovery process uncovers things that may gaps that they need addressed. And sometimes the new vision just out of that comes out, and it's really, for them, it's exciting in that sense.
So what kind of mistakes do you find? I'm operating under the impression that you probably see a lot of the same thing over and over and over again. What kind of mistakes do people make with respect to their web presence if they don't take advantage of working with somebody like you that really knows what he's doing?
Well, usually a company is one of the very common things like we'll ask a company is really what business are you in, and oftentimes a company will come say, I want to build a website, I want to have a web presence, and you just ask them what business are you in, and they are stopped.
That's a problem.
That's a red flag.
Well, the problem is sometimes even there's a lot, and when we're talking about like very successful companies, sometimes they are successful, they don't really know why they are successful, and it's mm-hmm. important to understand that as well. And by having them ask what is the intention of your company, what's the purpose, it enables them to see the technology as a way of supporting that. Because oftentimes you would have, say, technology is not there for itself. It's there to support a business model rather than the opposite. And when the technology supports your business model, your business can grow really quickly. And the purpose of the whatever it is trying to build with the technology, the application, would be helpful.
So how are you getting your business? Because this strikes me as a very competitive arena. I mean, I've got cousins and brother-in-laws and all that say that they're in the web business and they know something about this mobile stuff. How do you set yourself apart, aside from this North Marietta accent of yours?
One of the things is word of mouth. Most of our business comes from referrals. And it's also about we are at a point where we actually are very picky about projects that we choose, because a lot of building a web system is there's a lot of hours involved in it. So now we don't just take any projects. We want to take something that's of value. And we are very much interested in having more like a technology partnership with companies rather than what we have that's called a software for hire type of model. Pretty much the type of business is it's based on referral. And
now, are you the one doing all the work? Are you the guy up until the middle of the night doing the coding of this stuff? Or?
No, I'm not. I am a programmer myself and a system architect, but we do have also developers working on our team.
So you have, are they all here or they're all over the world?
They are all over the world because that's pretty much the way is the new world is. This boundaryless, and we work with wherever the best person to work with is where we will work with them. And because we work in a web-based environment, it doesn't matter. Location doesn't really matter for us.
Mm-hmm. So you had a question, Ray?
Yeah, I was interested in the phenomenal
growth. You need a website?
Have I got a website?
No, you need one. You need help. Web help.
We might need it enhanced. I'll come back to Alan afterwards. Yeah, good idea. But I was more interested in the phenomenal growth of social media, and it's a Pandora's box that's been opened. I mean, there's the growth rate is just incredible, but how it's interesting to find out how that is integrated into the normal web presence. And I guess from a parent's perspective, mm-hmm. I've got young kids, and my concern is that they're going to grow huge thumbs and lose the ability to speak and lose their social skills. So apart from the business benefits, should I as a parent be concerned about where social media is taking us from a human perspective?
You should not, in the way that your kids are already perfect as they are, in that sense.
You haven't met Ray's kids.
I was just going to say that.
believe it or not, it actually helps their intelligence to be exposed to so many more stimuli in life altogether.
Right.
And when we look at from when we were kids, the type of things we were exposed to the amount of data that they process every day.
Right.
It's amazing.
But it's interesting to see that nowadays, like, anything could happen anywhere in the world. Like, we saw what was happening in Iran, and normally that information would be oppressed, and within a nanosecond, it's all around the world, and that's just where we are. So there's the ability, if companies can find the ability to trap all that noise and information that's going on.
Right,
you've
got to filter it out, because you have anybody with a phone now can be a newspaper person. Like, the person in Iran can be tweeting what's happening.
Yeah.
No matter what the government
wants. Anybody with a microphone can host a radio show.
Yeah, we're proof of that every day.
As long as they pay their electricity bill.
Exactly. So I guess, like you said, the genie's out of the bottle. Right?
You can't turn it. You can't turn the clock back. You can only look at what you can do with that. But can you imagine from a corporate perspective, if you've got the ability to trap that information and that that information that's kicking about your product right now, and gave it to a company, they can adjust their marketing plan instantly, as opposed to finding out after it's
right,
too late.
Months later, right?
Yeah,
they
absolutely.
Can find out
huge,
in real time.
Well, there's one trend that you will notice that was like within 3 to 4 years is a search as Google, Yahoo, and all as we know it will no longer be useful. That's going to evolve very much in the sense that it's not just you typing a keyword, but you will be able to find the relevant information you want exactly how you want it, not having to go through a lot of results and figure out what's good and what's not.
Wow.
So. Yeah, a lot of the companies are using the social media as their customer service. They can find a problem because people are tweeting about it or they're talking about it on social media, and then that allows their customer service people to kind of pounce in and kind of have a conversation with that person before it explodes and becomes a big problem.
I do know that, you know, in the international community, there's a company here in Atlanta who came from Ireland called Sentiment 360, and they are actually involved in that. I'm not remotely an expert in it, but they are certainly one of the global leaders in being able to troll through all that noise that's happening out in social media and then be able to give it to companies, like Jaguar, Porsche, whatever it might be, and give them instant feedback on what the world's thinking about them right now.
Now, is there a difference, and I'm going to open this up to everyone here on the show today, is there a difference in the adoption rate or the level at which people and organizations embrace social media and internet? Is there a difference with other countries versus the United States, or Europeans or Asians more likely to adapt stuff quicker, or has anybody picked up a difference in that?
I can speak from the French perspective, and I think you'd be hard-pressed to find any French person who doesn't have a cell phone and doesn't walk down the street looking at social media today.
Is that right?
Yeah. It's been adopted very quickly in I think most industrialized countries around the world. And even in countries that we wouldn't consider industrialized countries, I think it's become an opportunity and a means to bypass inefficient systems that are in place, using cell phones now in Africa because landlines just don't exist.
So they leapfrogged that technology.
Exactly.
They never even engaged in the landline technology, right?
And in a lot of places they have. And it's actually become a big... And we had an event we did about a couple months ago that was looking at technology use in French-speaking African countries, and we were looking at the use of mobile telephony to enable financial transactions, because now you don't have to have a physical bank in your country, and you don't have to have access to that. You can do it all through your cell phone. So you can actually do business through your cell phone in a lot of these countries now where it wouldn't have been possible 20 years ago.
That's the incredible thing is if you go back 20 years ago, 50 years ago, whatever, it's not a long period of time that there's been this exponential growth. But if you look at a couple of the key factors, this is just an opinion, that have changed things. We've now got a much more shrunken world. It's easy because of flight and airlines to be able to get anywhere in the world. No matter where you are, communications and the ability to gather information, whether it's through your cell phone or television, is instant. So the world's so much smaller now, you know, in terms of being able to pull it all together. So, you know, some of what we might have called third world countries are pretty well developed and pretty well advanced in terms of that, surprisingly so, and it's happened in such a short period of time.
Yeah. One thing you'll find also in the global economy is the technology, the way it's adopted. Does it make any difference, take into account social differences between countries? And you can launch an application as a system. If it works, it has value today here in Atlanta, and it's just instantly global. It can be accessed by the world, anyone from the world, from Africa to France. And it's really amazing because you can export. Say you have a subscription base or you sell advertising on your application, you actually exporting instantly overnight to other countries. And that's perhaps a value or one aspect we are not really leveraging on.
Just ask yourself where all those spam messages are coming from. They ask you about, can you transfer $15 bazillion over from my whatever, you know. That's a global world, you know.
Well, Alan's using a global workforce.
Absolutely.
That's right.
Yeah.
Now, why are you doing that? Is it because they have the perspective and the skills that they need, and or is it is the labor, the investment in the labor less expensive, or what's the motivation? Why would you use someone in France instead of someone in Marietta to do the work?
It's really about having the best person to work with. You're not limited. Like, for instance,
the French aren't as ornery as the good old boys in Marietta. They're easier to work with.
Well, it's really, if you have a person who is located in France and happen to understand a specific technology, like for instance, we are working a lot on video streaming, and that person happens to have the skills or the thirst to work on that, and they can work fast. And there's also an advantage of having people work on different time zones, is that you can have around-the-clock work. And so that's you go where the best person is.
Yeah, that's an amazing concept to think that, you know, you can actually have people working 24 hours a day on projects from Japan to India to Europe and then in the United States and just kind of passing it along. It's really, really a fascinating concept.
I used to use that model when I was in the employment industry. I used to send a request to India by email, click send, and it's received in Mumbai or whatever. They would start doing internet searching and all that good stuff for hot candidates while I'm sleeping, because that's because of the time zone. And then I get the email back the next morning. I come in at 8 o'clock in the morning, and I've got the results. I mean, that's just how.
That's great, yeah. Lee. I am feeling very enlightened and international today.
Yes,
you know,
it's opened our eyes.
Yeah, I think I'm going to go downstairs and have a crepe and maybe an espresso and
make it a Haggis crepe.
Alan, before we let you go, what's the best way for our listeners to get in touch with you, learn more about what you can do for them, and maybe have a substantive conversation with you about engaging you to help them drive their business?
Okay, two ways. Our website is www.creativechallenges.com, and that phone number 678-638-6180.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today, man. We really appreciate it.
It's
marvelous to get some validation on some of what the other guys had to say and to learn more about your world. I really appreciate you coming by, man.
Thank you. Pleasure.
All right. Well, this wraps up another episode of Atlanta Business Radio. And everybody, please don't forget to go to Global Connect on Thursday, July 21st, 2011, from 5:30 to 9 at the 200 Peachtree Building. You can go over to Ray's website, babg.org, and find out more information about the event and to register. And for Stone Payton, this is Lee Cantor. We will see you all next week.